Washing Tech.
Hey everybody, I missed yesterday. Usually I publish on Tuesday, as you know, but I had a lot of family stuff going on yesterday, so I had to take care of that. But without further ado, let's get into it.
The common parlance now and the national narrative now is that we can't find truth anywhere, that it's impossible to discover and we'll never agree on it. But when we're getting entertained, this is what we really value.
Welcome to the Washing Tech Policy Podcast. We deliver the latest tech policy news and brightest tech policy experts to you. Wherever you are, so that you can stay productive, relevant, and informed in less time. From Washington, D.C., it's the Washing Tech Policy Podcast with Joe Miller.
CBS and Viacom strike a merger deal. Whole Foods workers protest Amazon's work with ICE. And Joanna Blakely is my guest on the show today. CBS and Viacom has struck a merger deal worth about $50 billion, according to CNBC. The companies have been negotiating a merger for 3 years, which often put CBS and Viacom Vice Chair Shari Redstone at odds with former CBS CEO Les Moonves, who has since left the company, mired by sexual harassment and abuse claims. The Redstone family-controlled National Amusements owns both companies. The combined entity will include CBS as well as Viacom brands MTV, BET, Showtime, Nickelodeon, Comedy Central, and Paramount. Whole Worker, the anonymous group of Whole Foods workers seeking to unionize the Amazon subsidiary's workforce, released a protest letter last week opposing Amazon's work with Immigration and Customs Enforcement. The letter specifically calls out Amazon's cloud support for Palantir, the mysterious company partially owned by Trump supporter Peter Thiel that helps ICE use artificial intelligence to carry out deportations. You know how Facebook figures out if it's your face in the images you post? Well, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit has ruled that a class of Facebook users can sue Facebook under California law for using the facial recognition technology behind that feature without user consent. California's Biometric Information Act requires companies to obtain consent before using the biometric data of their users. The 2015 lawsuit could put Facebook on the hook for billions of dollars. U.S. Senator Marsha Blackburn, who's a member of the Senate's Technology, Innovation, and the Internet Subcommittee, called out Huawei for allegedly implanting spyware on devices. Blackburn said the China-based company is part of China's military-industrial complex designed to spy on the United States and other countries. Huawei is still on the Commerce Department's blacklist, but last month President Trump said that he would allow U.S. companies to sell equipment to Huawei. Finally, Senator Ron Wyden and California Representative Ted Lieu blasted Mitch McConnell at the Maine Worldwide Hacker Conference, DEF CON, last week for McConnell's opposition to election security. McConnell has blocked legislation to strengthen election security, stating that federal legislation to defend election systems interferes with states' rights. And you can find links to all of these stories in the show notes and also in our Twitter feed, and our handle is at WashingTech. Stay with us.
Washing Tech, the inclusive voice of tech policy. Because America won't stand still for the same old insiders. Washing Tech, moving the needle.
My guest today is Joanna Blakely, Managing Director at the Norman Lear Center, based at the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism. Blakely performs research on a wide variety of topics, including global entertainment, cultural diplomacy, entertainment education, celebrity culture, fashion, digital media, and intellectual property law. Please welcome Joanna Blakely. Joanna, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So you authored a report recently in partnership with Future Perfect, looking at the TV viewing habits across ideologies. So why this report, and how do you see it being used?
Well, our academic research at the Norman Lear Center, which is where I'm based at the University of Southern California, has found that people are often influenced by the entertainment that they consume. People learn things from entertainment, they shift their attitudes on issues, and sometimes they take action based on compelling fictional stories. So I'm not talking about news here. So in this study, we wanted to see if there are patterns of entertainment preferences that correlate with political perspectives on the world. 10 years ago, we developed a diagnostic that would help us understand a person's economic, social, and political beliefs, because people are not so good at describing those things objectively. We found strong correlations in this study and earlier studies between people's entertainment preferences and this ideological perspective that we gleaned from this diagnostic. So in this survey, we asked people about 50 of the most popular TV shows on Facebook. So these are long-time popular shows. And we also asked them not only what they watch, but why they watch it and what they get out of this programming, what kinds of emotional payoffs and what kinds of information do they get from consuming these stories. And in the end, I think we've created a really fascinating data set that allows us to track what people believe about the world and what they watch, why they watch it, and what actions they take based on the stories they consume. And we know that a lot of storytellers are really hoping to change the world in some way. And so you can see why they would want to know not only what people are watching, but what they might do based on what they're watching.
So now you categorized everyone into blues, reds, and purples. I have some idea what that means, but how much have they changed since the last iteration of your report 10 years ago?
Well, we've always found three groups when we've done this study. We never predetermined the number of groups, but three have always emerged. And there's always a very interesting middle group, a swing group, as it were. And this time, I think we found them particularly interesting. They make up about 1 in 5 Americans, and they hold positions all across the political spectrum. And it's they always tend to be the most unpredictable group, and also the group of most interest to political campaigns and marketing campaigns looking for people who are kind of in the middle and willing to shift. What we were really surprised by, I'd say, is that the biggest shift that we saw ideologically between 2008 and 2018 was a move toward the middle. Instead of seeing people becoming more extreme, we saw people becoming less extreme about issues. And on 8 of 9 issues where we saw this taking place, they were moving toward the liberal end of the spectrum. There was only one issue, that was tax reduction, where groups were moving generally toward the red direction. And those 8 issues where people were moving left was the environment, regulation of business, privacy around new technologies, public education, guns, marriage, abortion, helping the poor. So that was quite fascinating to see.
It's just a fascinating report. And so where do these different groups stand on how they view America's role in the world?
Well, that has changed in a really interesting way as well. What we saw there was a reversal, actually, in the positions of all of these groups. So the question that we asked both then and now was, do you agree that America should actively promote its values of freedom and democracy around the world? They could strongly agree or slightly agree with that statement, or they could strongly or slightly agree with this opposing statement. It is not America's job to promote its values around the world. And what we found is that more blues and purples, that swing group, have moved toward a more international perspective, now agreeing with that statement. And reds, a majority of them, now agree that it is not America's job to do this work, which is a reversal of their position before. And this, of course, reflects the isolationist rhetoric that we hear now from the Trump administration.
And what differences have you seen in terms of the shows that these different groups watch, particularly the purple group?
Well, the shows have changed a lot since 10 years ago. There's just a much wider variety of programming. but we have seen that definitely people are able to seek out material that suits them ideologically. There's so many more choices now than there were before. But one of the defining factors of this research that we found since 2007 is that the conservative group is the least engaged and interested in mainstream television shows. If they do like them, they don't like them as well as other groups tend to. And there are very few shows that they actually liked more than other groups did. And that included America's Funniest Home Videos, Deadliest Catch, NCIS, which was by far their favorite show, and Pawn Stars, that crazy Las Vegas show about a pawn shop.
You know, I know about America's Funniest Home Videos and the other ones you mentioned, except for NCIS. I never got NCIS, so I guess that says a lot about me.
It does indeed, because you are what you watch, right?
Yeah. So do you see common ground between these groups?
Yes, we did. We asked about 50 different TV shows, and there were five that they watched equally, that a vast majority of them watched. And that was America's Funniest Home Videos, Bones, Criminal Minds, and Mythbusters, which they all equally liked really well. And then the fifth show was Pawn Stars, as I mentioned before. A lot of people watched this show, but when we looked at how people rated the show, it was very low. So we realized that this is actually the most hate-watched show in America.
That's funny. So now, what is that show? Is it like the one on PBS, the Antiques Roadshow or something?
Well, I think people might get them mixed up until they watch them. This is much grittier. It's in Vegas. It's people who are in dire straits.
Got it. Okay.
Yes.
All right.
But interestingly, I do think that there is a connective tissue among all of these five shows. They seem quite diverse, but I think the underlying factor there is the value of truth. So in Pawn Stars, for instance, you find out the actual value of that heirloom that your grandma lied about, that it's really not worth anything at all.
Right.
On Bones
right.
and Criminal Minds, these are very conventional detective shows,
yeah.
You know, where you're finding out who did it. And America's Funniest Home Videos, you know, that show was very much about the true American spirit, right? The silly, stupid things that we couldn't make up. That people actually did,
yeah.
Right? It's a defining reality show of sorts. And then Mythbusters, I don't know if you're familiar with that show, but it's about scientific skepticism and about the scientific process. So I thought that was really quite poignant, actually, that the shows that seem to reach across these ideological divides are shows that value truth. And the common parlance now and the national narrative now is that we can't find truth anywhere. That it's impossible to discover and we'll never agree on it. But when we're getting entertained, this is what we really value.
And you can access the report by texting TV Study to 33777. That's TV Study to 33777. Joanna, thanks for joining me. Now let's turn to your icebreaker, career advice, and your pick for our book this week. All right, what is one thing that most people don't know about you?
Well, my dad was a radio announcer.
Is that right?
And so I really grew up listening to the radio and listened to him as both a music DJ and a newscaster. And I have always wanted my own music radio show.
That's fantastic because I had the same dream. That's interesting. So now what?
I thought that might be the case.
Yeah, so now what? So what was his name and where was he on the air?
His name was Randy Blakely.
There we go.
His name was Ralph, but that didn't sound so good on the air.
Okay. So he said Randy. That's awesome. I won't tell you, but I will tell you my radio name. I was going to tell you something else for my thing that most people don't know. I was going to tell you that I do electronic music as a hobby, not as a side gig. But my radio name in college was horrible. It was Jump Around Joey Fox. Isn't that terrible?
Jump Around Joey Fox.
Oh, God, that's terrible. Yeah. So I got a lot of heat for that at my wedding for my best man. But anyway.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt.
So anyway, turning to career advice, what's the best piece of advice you've ever received?
Well, you know, the one that I share most often is due to the fact that I have a couple of TED Talks on TED.com. So people often ask me about public speaking. You know, even high-level executives can be incredibly nervous about this and really insecure about it. And I find that people are usually surprised when I say that the number one most important thing about delivering a speech that's really going to work is understanding your audience. You know, figuring out what they're likely to already think about your topic and then building a bridge to where you want to take them. And I think people just get so hung up with this notion that my speech is about me that they end up screwing up because they're not doing it for the audience. And the audience is really the group that's going to make it work or not.
Absolutely. And I hear this all the time that people go out for coffee, you know, even casually. And the conversation just turns to what the other person wants to just talk about themselves the entire time, doesn't ask questions, and there's no connection at all. So take that under advisement, especially if you're, you know, networking. Make sure that you're asking about the other person. Well, thanks again, Joanna, for joining me. Do you have any final ideas you'd like to leave with us before we close? And where can we find you online?
Oh, well, I'm available on Twitter at MojoJohanna. And you'll find a lot of our research on LearCenter.org and also on the MediaImpactProject.org. We've done hundreds of studies on the social impact of media and entertainment.
What are you reading and watching these days?
Well, I recently finished a fantastic trilogy by Qichen Liu, a Chinese science fiction writer. It's called The Remembrance of Earth's Past. And I absolutely loved it. And I found out it was Obama's favorite book when he was president. And he said, and I just thought this was remarkable, that it put his own problems in perspective.
Interesting.
So I think people working in the Beltway could use a book that does exactly that.
Yeah, seriously. Does it sort of look, if it's science fiction, does it look to the future based on human experience in the past? Is that the premise?
Absolutely, yes. And it really takes into account a kind of a really galactic crisis opposed to simply a global one.
Interesting, because I've been reading Homo Deus by Yuval Noah Harari, which is fascinating for the same reason. He really has a grasp on anthropology and where we're going with AI.
Right. Fascinating topics.
Well, you've been listening to Joanna Blakely, Managing Director of the Norman Lear Center based at the University of Southern California. Dr. Blakely, thanks for joining me.
You're very welcome.
That concludes episode 196 of the podcast. Thanks so much for listening. If you like what we do here, we'd absolutely love to hear from you. Please take a moment and head over to Apple Podcasts. Give it a review. It helps others know what they can expect from the show and really helps us out. Thanks again for listening, and I'll see you back here next week. Take care.
Washing Tech.